So I'm going to talk about the latest trends in Gen Z. For me, this is a huge topic because it is our future. So for all of us in higher ed, so for me, I've been looking at this for 2 or 3 years now, and I feel like finally at WVU we're starting to do things to reach Gen Z specifically. So before I get into that, I want to tell you a little bit about me. So this is my team. This is me failing to motivate them at our third straight welcome week day. I promise they don't look this sad all the time. So this is the team that manages our West Virginia U social media presence. So we manage our main social accounts, our presidential accounts as well. And then I kind of also take a look at all of the accounts across our colleges and schools and help them and advise them to do the right things. So what has changed over actually the last month is that in university relations, which I'm a part of, we have actually taken over or brought in our undergraduate enrollment part as well. So everything that I had done before this too was really focused on the enrollment and undergrad side of things, but now it's even a bigger part of what I do. So this talk and talking about Gen Z is even more important. So I will jump in and talk first about who Gen Z is. And one thing to start out with by saying is, I think as marketers in general, we have all gotten really good at reaching millennials because we've had 15, 20 years to do it. But you know, with any generational thing, that changes. A new generation is up, and we have to figure out how to reach them, especially on social media, because that's where they are. So who is Gen Z? They are anybody between the ages of 7 and 21. And if you don't feel like doing math in the morning, that is okay, because I did it for you. So anybody born between 1995 and 2010. So if you think about it, that is our current students and our future students. So it is really the future of our universities. And it also they also represent 25% of our U.S. population. So how do they differ? This is one of my favorite slides in the presentation. Does anybody know who Shawn Mendes is? Okay, like half of you. that's good. It was about half of you guys, by the way. So he's a musician who became famous on Vine, huge with Gen Z. I'll take a look at some of these. So I'm a millennial. I grew up with Facebook. It was the first social media platform that I kind of embraced. For Gen Z, it's really Instagram. We as millennials are used to Netflix. They are used to YouTube because they don't really have the money to spend for Netflix right now. They also are used to visuals. They like visuals. We grew up with text. That's kind of what we know. I think that's changed a little bit. But for the most part, text is what worked for millennials. Visuals is what's going to work for Gen Z. And then you see the rest of them there. So for the most part, I think the generations are fairly similar, but there are little things that we can do to take advantage of this chart and change the way that we do things. What I'm going to do for the first 7-8 minutes is talk to you a little bit more about Gen Z, and then I will get into what we can do in higher ed to really reach Gen Z a little bit differently. So first thing is Gen Z wants to change the world. So they care about things like human rights and global warming, and they want to know that by coming to your university, that they are going to be able to get the education and help to be able to actually go out and change the world. Social entrepreneurship, and I'm going to tell you that the fact that I got that correct is amazing, is a really popular career. So they want to go and get a job out there that they can really go and change things out in the world. So they are also less risky. If you think about it, they were born around 9/11. They've watch their parents deal with recession and housing crisis and all that stuff. They have always been concerned about safety, so they are cautious. On top of that, a fourth of them were targets of bullying. So for them, the fact that they have to fit in or they want to fit in is really key. So I know most of us really talk about that best fit message whenever we're recruiting and things like that. But it's even more important than ever to talk about that with Gen Z. On top of that, if you are at a party school, for example, you'll probably be excited for Gen Z because they are less likely to drink, smoke, or do drugs. And they also appreciate authenticity. So they are smart, and they are realistic, so they can tell whenever you are feeding them something that's not true. So being authentic and being real is really important for Gen Z. So they are also the first true digital natives, which as a millennial, I kind of hate that. But it's real. They are. They have grown up with a tablet or something in their hands at all times. Since birth, they send 100 texts a day. They pay attention for 8 seconds, so I'm glad there aren't a lot of Gen Zers in here because you guys would be out already. And on top of that, they can access information easily and they do it on their own, which I think is a little bit different than millennials who maybe would have waited a little bit. So you send them a print piece and then there's a URL on there. That's whenever they look. With Gen Z, they are going to go out and Google you before you even get to them. So from that side of things, it makes it a little bit more of a challenge, and it makes us have, from a digital perspective, everything needs to be done before we even think about really communicating back and forth with them. So they also want to be entertained, and they need visuals to keep attention. So that's talking about, you know, photos, videos, graphics, all of that. They need that stuff. In addition to that, they really connect with misfits. So things like the movie like The Guardians of the Galaxy, a TV show like Glee, that really works for them. They see themselves as this type of underdog. So for them, that kind of underdog story like these really works. And they're using media in general to escape normal life, outside of normal classwork and, you know, all of the stuff that they would do. They're using social media and, you know, books, games, all of that stuff to get away from things. That sounds kind of negative, but for us in higher ed, I wouldn't be worried because Gen Z still values higher ed. That at least gives us job security for another decade, so that's good. But for us, I think now what we have to think, because of this, because they do value what we do, we have to figure out how to take advantage of that. How can we go out and continue to recruit students at the rate that we're doing? So what should we be doing? The rest of this is going to be talking about the things that I think we really need to start to do in higher ed, especially on social media, to get to really reach Gen Z in a better way. Some things we're already doing at WVU, so I have a couple of examples, but some things are just, you know, thoughts. So the first thing that we must do is we must be where they are. So use platforms like Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube as well. And I think most of you are probably on them already, but just a note there too is we should be really focusing on using every opportunity and every option and feature of those platforms. So we should be using geofilters. We should be putting stuff on both stories on Instagram and Snapchat. We should be using Bitmojis. All those things that Gen Z is using in general now, we should also be using from the higher ed side of things. Also, we need to make sure that we put a priority on engaging. So a situation where every mention matters. So what we've kind of seen with Gen Z in general, and I think Dan mentioned this in the keynote yesterday morning, or yesterday afternoon, but that we're seeing less and less mentions from this Gen Z audience because they are lurking. So they are still there, but they may not mention you as much, or they may not comment as much. So we really need to take advantage of the mentions that we get, and on top of that, really try to make content for those people who are lurking and not necessarily posting back and forth for you. I will get into that in a couple of minutes. In addition to this, we need to be looking at the newest tech. So I don't know if your universities are the same as it is at WVU, but anytime something new comes up, they ask me what to do with it. And usually I have no idea, and maybe I've never heard of it, but I make up an answer or do some research. But we really knew, to me, anything that's new, especially to people who aren't in social media, they think of new as social. So for us, we need to be thinking about things like AR and VR, because that is the next 5 years. We're a little ways away from that, and I think higher ed has a long way to go there, but that's stuff that we should at least be thinking about. In addition to that, we need to be visual and we need to be short. We have 8 seconds to reach them, and if we can't do it in 8 seconds, then we've lost that opportunity. So being short and being as visual as possible is key when we're talking about Gen Z. Next thing is higher ed must get better at YouTube, like this guy Casey Neistat. To me, YouTube is the single most important social media platform for Gen Z. And as I was going through and looking at higher ed social in general, I think YouTube is a spot where we can make the most improvement. I also think it's the platform that we talk the least about, because we've gotten so used to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, LinkedIn, and the others. But to me, YouTube is a social platform, and that has changed a little bit at our university. About 2 years ago, I made an effort to say, you know, YouTube is social. I didn't run it, from my perspective. So I fought pretty hard and eventually got control of it to now where I post every video, I make it I make it live, and then I change thumbnails and titles and all of that. I think that's where we need to head. And I think that's one of the problems with YouTube, really, is that maybe you guys, who has control of their YouTube page, by the way? Most of you? Okay, good. But some of you in here didn't, and I think that is a problem, that one, we don't make enough videos because they're tough to make. And two, we don't have control of those pages. But for us, I think over the next 3 to 5 years, YouTube is a spot where we really need to work. So on top of that, I think we really need to focus on video production. In a perfect world at WVU, what I would like to have is where we are posting 3 to 5 videos a week on YouTube. And we are by no means anywhere near that. But we're kind of working to that. So I just went through a process of hiring a social media editor, and one of the key things that I looked at whenever I was hiring somebody is somebody who knew how to do video. And the person that we eventually hired was a videographer by trade. So this is how serious we are taking the video thing at WVU. But what I'm going to do now is show you a video that we've done in the past. It's something that I like to call simple, short, social video. So it's a minute long. We try to hit videos anywhere between 30 and 90 seconds. And it's really just, it's something for Gen Z. It's beautiful. It's visual. So I'll play this now, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about it after. So in general, that video is a combination of drone footage and time lapse and some other stuff that we've been able to put together with a couple of words to make what we're calling a recruitment video, basically. We're saying with this video, we can send this out in an email, put it on our websites to high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors that, hey, if you come to West Virginia University in the fall, it is the most beautiful place on earth. So that has worked for us, and we've done videos like this for every season. And we continue to do videos like this that are short, that are really visual. I'm a huge fan of drone footage, so we use that in almost every video that we do, things like that. So really, from my perspective, I think over the next 3 to 5 years, video is going to become even better. For us, our video posts on social are getting almost 3 times the reach of any other post. And I think it's probably the same for most of you guys out here. But I think that's going to continue. So for us, I really think we need to embrace it and try to get social integrated more with video in general. I have the great, a video team that to work with at WVU, so it's great for me. But before 2 years ago, we didn't talk back and forth. Now I'm in their meetings. We talk every day. We're involved with every video. So we're doing things like that to make video a bigger deal at WVU and with social. So on top of that, we need to stay relevant. I love a good Mario dab, so And when I say we need to be relevant, I'm talking about two things. So one, we must add value. So we need to take a look. When we're talking about Gen Z, we need to take a look at what our recruitment goals are and find ways to really connect social to them. I think a lot of people who, probably outside of this room, don't see a way where social can affect a big goal like that. That's still a problem that we have, I think, when we're talking about hierarchy in higher ed. So for us, I think tying what we do to specific goals is really, really, really important. But on top of that, when I mean staying relevant, is we have to find ways to stay cool. And I'll give you an example of three things that we have done at WVU in the past. First thing is and those are really hard to read, but first thing is last year, whenever Pokemon Go was a thing, we created a map of the Pokestops on campus. That's still a sentence that I can't believe I said and did for my job. So we did that, though, just because it was so popular and it was mainstream at the time, and we thought that's what we needed to do to stay relevant. Anybody needs a pumpkin carver for next year, let me know. I am available. That is, I spent 6 hours doing that last week. I also charge by the hour. But, you know, it's our 150th birthday. We've been celebrating it all year at the university. That's our logo. So doing something like that and stuff around the holidays is really important. Those things keep us relevant again. And then I pulled something from yesterday, actually. My social media editor texted me while we were at the conference and said this hashtag was trending. So we did a post with it just at that time. Did anybody take advantage of this yesterday, too? Okay. Yes, one. Good. So that's those are three, you know, short examples of how to stay relevant. And I think there are some people out there that say this isn't strategic. I think that that's crap, to be honest with you. I think this is very strategic because this is what Gen Z wants. If they're trying to get away from things, if they're trying to get away from their normal lives, their schoolwork and everything when they are on social media, this is the stuff that they want. They don't just want a hard ask every time they are on social media. So things like this help us stay connected with them subtly, and then in the back of their minds, they're always thinking about us, which is a good thing. So on top of that, we really need to think about experiences with Gen Z. I like to say any event that we have, we need to make it Instagram worthy, where they can go to it, take a photo, post it, so they can remember it, and so all of their friends can see it too. It's really important, especially when we're talking about our recruiting events. We want to make sure that there's something there that they can snap back to their friends who are at high school as well, and be like, this is great. You should come visit WVU because of this. And what we've started to do at WVU a little bit more is we're treating every platform a little bit more like Instagram, and that includes our platforms targeted to our older demographic like Facebook and LinkedIn. We are posting almost every LinkedIn or every Instagram photo to those platforms now, just because we're seeing that that's working. That visual content is really hitting the mark. So for us, our posts are a little bit shorter, the text in the posts. We're using more emojis and things like that. But for the most part, I think treating things like Instagram is going to be a good thing because it is the platform that is, you know, really growing. So on top of that, we must think like influencers. Does anybody know who these two people are? So if you were a fan of Vine, then you probably do. This is Logan and Jake Paul. They are famous YouTubers, two of the most famous in the U.S. right now. And if you know them, whenever I say the sentence, we must think like influencers, you're like, no, I am not going to take my mascot and have them jump off of a roof into a swimming pool. But and I don't mean it like that necessarily, but really with influencers, that's what Gen Z is looking at. For us, we were looking at celebrities as this thing, you know, this big thing. For them, it's influencers. Influencers to me are what made Instagram stories a thing. They started to use them, and then Gen Z came along and started to use them too because of that. So for me, we need to be thinking, how can we take little things that influencers are doing, and by that I'm talking about YouTubers, Instagram stars, things like that, people like that. We need to take little things and adapt what we do to make it feel more like that. So I'll give you two quick examples about how we've kind of changed our YouTube channel around a little bit to do this. So a big YouTube trend right now is to make your titles all caps. We started to do that about 6 months ago and have just kept doing that. The other thing that we did is we changed the way that we do thumbnails on YouTube. So before, we just took a screen cap of the video and that was it. Now we do it big and bold. We usually have white outlines around a person, and we try to make it look like any other famous YouTube account. So what we've seen actually, and part of this is because YouTube is getting younger and younger by the day, but our account is getting younger too. We're seeing more views from younger people, and I like to think that some of those subtle things that we've done have really helped do that. So we must think like influencers, and we must talk with their personal influencers as well. And whenever I mean that, I mean parents. So I think 40% of Gen Z believe that their parents are their best friend. So for us, that means that we need to be talking to their parents a lot too. And I know most of us already do that, but I think that's really where Facebook plays a part. And one thing to think about with their parents is that they are just as skeptical about the world as their students are. So they went through the same, you know, they went through the stuff that their kids were seeing. So they are skeptical, which means we also have to really be authentic and everything with them as well. So be authentic. So I think there are two ways that a student, especially a first-time college student, thinks about a university. There's that on the left, the expectation, or there's the studying in the library and that's all you do. For us, what we've tried to do is give a more realistic idea of what a university experience is at WVU. So the reality is that you might have to go to the library on a Friday night before you go out in your Hawaiian shirt and your lei, have a folding chair, and study for an hour or two. That is an actual photo that one of our students posted on Instagram, by the way. So I think what we need to do is really showcase that, you know, we need to be real about it. For our university, we are known because Princeton Review has done this to us as a party school. So we've tried to switch things around a little bit, and I mean, we're never going to say that we are in recruitment materials or anything like that, but we started this mantra of work smart and play smart. So we're acknowledging at least a little bit that you get a full out experience at WVU. You can learn a lot, you can gain a great job from being here, but you can also learn a lot of life lessons as well. So that is that's kind of what we've tried to do, and it's worked. I think people appreciate that, you know, we're not just hiding everything. We're not showing everything either, but we're doing as much as we can to be real about the experience that you're going to get. The other thing that we can do is we really need to focus on outcomes. So like I said a little bit earlier, is these students are looking at changing the world. So we need to think not just about what major they're going into, but what they could potentially do in the future. So I'll give you a quick example of one way that we've done that. And on our Instagram account, we showcased this alum. His name is Nick, and he is actually part of the Hurricane Hunters. So over the summer, whenever, you know, there were all the hurricanes in the Caribbean and doing so much damage to the world, he was flying through them in a plane, gathering data and sending it to the National Weather Service to track, you know, where hurricanes were headed. A pretty big job. And this is a guy who graduated a year and a half ago. So for us, I follow him on Snapchat already because he was part of our social media ambassador group. But he was posting stuff in his Snapchat already, and I'm like, okay, why don't we do this too? So we had him take over our West Virginia U Snapchat account one day and just showcase that experience. And to me, that he spent the whole day kind of showing how they prep for this, what they do, showing, you know, views from the plane as they were going through the eye of the hurricane, things like that. It was truly unique to our university, an experience that this guy got that we can say, you know, because of his WVU education, he was able to do this. And the amount of high school students that asked questions to him on that day. I think he probably had about 200 questions asked to him. That's not a lie. Some of them weren't Gen Z. Some of them weren't high school kids. But a lot of people did reach out, ask questions about his time at WVU, what his job is now, and things like that. So that really worked for us. And then the final thing that I want to talk about today is we really need to give Gen Z a reason to engage with us. Like I've said, you know, they are much less likely to mention us. It's just the way that they are. For me, that doesn't mean that we stop doing what we're doing. It just means that we need to work harder to do this. We really need to work harder at creating content to make them engage. One final example I'll give you is something that happened on our campus a little bit earlier this semester. I think actually the first week on campus, we did a tweet along with our fight song. So we rallied a couple of different, probably about 15, maybe 20 different social media accounts around the university and had them tweet out a line of the fight song and a reply all to the one before. Eventually, at the end of the day, once people realized what was going on, we had the full fight song in a tweet. So when we did that and when people realized what was happening, this is the response that we got. Which was really, really great. I like the one on the top left the best. But, you know, these are all Gen Zers. You know, they took the time, they saw this content, and they saw that it was different, and they made an effort to go out and let us know that they liked it and let all of their followers know as well. We had tons of mentions and comments after doing this. And to me, it's a good example of thinking a little bit outside of the box, and I know people have done this before, but for us, we've never done it before. So thinking outside of the box and doing something a little bit different and finding those key things that really, really engage this group, because it is going to be a little bit tougher in the next decade or so to get them to really interact back and forth with us. So, and the last thing that I will say is when we're talking about Gen Z, I think we're all going to do this together. We're going to learn how to reach them by examples that you guys are doing, examples that we're doing, success stories and all that, which I think is what makes conferences like this really, really important, that we come here and we showcase the stuff that we're doing. And I think higher ed in general is kind of a different beast in that we like to do this. We like to come up and showcase and share things. Businesses and things aren't like this, I don't think. So I appreciate that, and I think we're going to have to do this together to figure out how to reach Gen Z. So with that, I am done, and I can take some questions, I think, if I have some time. So.
Hey, I'm from Samford University in Alabama. Sam, not Stan. And I'm curious with your YouTube channel, now that you're moving towards, you know, the unique thumbnails and all of that, or that you have started doing that, are you creating videos specifically for YouTube now? Are you treating it like an influencer channel? Or, because right now, so I work very closely with our production team, and they understand social media, which is great. So I think I'm going to be able to, and I just came from Vid Summit a few weeks ago, so I think I'm going to be able to push in that direction. But there's still a mindset that every video we shoot goes on YouTube, and we just put it in a playlist somewhere. So I'm curious how you do that. Does every video go or no?
No, I've changed things a whole lot, which really ruffled some feathers at the beginning. But so first thing I did after I gained control of our YouTube account is went back through and did a content audit and actually unlisted 75% of our videos, all the way back through, I think, 2004 or something like that. So that was really the first step. And then what we do now is every video that our video team does, it goes on YouTube unlisted. So they will post it unlisted, and then we have a weekly meeting with our director of video, myself, our creative director, and we have a visual storytelling director as well. We all meet and discuss where those videos will go. So usually that's a place for me to say, you know, this isn't a recruitment video. This is more of a video where we send them to, you know, if it's a contract piece or something, we send it over to the people who requested it, and that's it. We just leave it unlisted. But For some videos, then, you know, I will make it live and then post it on Facebook and Twitter as well. We really haven't, and this is part of the goal of hiring a social media editor that has video experience. We've not done YouTube-specific stuff, but my goal within the next 3 months or so is to start a vlog series, because vlogging is so big on YouTube right now, to showcase a couple of students who are really good in front of a camera, some of their unique WVU experiences. So things like that. We've also done a dorm tour series. We call it WVU Cribs, which I don't think Gen Z has any idea what MT Cribs is. but we do, so it's fine. So we've started that, and we're making that just YouTube-specific content. So really why we're doing that is to help boost our numbers, because what we're seeing is whenever we post it everywhere, you know, it's not really helping YouTube much, so we're trying to create as much content as we can just for that.
Hi. When you're creating content for YouTube, are you then taking that, if you want to put it on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, are you directing traffic to your YouTube page, or are you natively uploading the video itself?
Yeah, so there are times whenever we will direct to YouTube. For the most part, though, especially whenever we have a video that reaches kind of a mass audience that we think everybody's going to enjoy, we'll put it on Facebook and Twitter as well. To me, I think we don't monetize our YouTube channel at all. I think that's, you know, if we did, that would change the way that we do things. We'd always push people to YouTube there. But I think as we move forward and we try to get to that point where we have 3 to 5 videos a week, that's whenever we will be pushing people more toward YouTube. But what we've started to do on Instagram and Snapchat is promo our videos in our story and clicking and having them click on the link to send them to YouTube. So that's the kind of way that we promote it. We don't do a lot of actual videos on Instagram. We just don't see the numbers and views that we would like compared to our normal actual photo posts. So we use the story to do that, if that makes sense.
So on Facebook, the data sort of supports the fact that somewhere around 80% of people are listening or are watching video with the sound off. YouTube is much less so, right? So my question is, are you producing versions of video, sort of silent film style captions or anything like that, to try and make your videos Facebook friendly versus YouTube friendly?
We have been working on that a little bit, but honestly, what I would say is the video I showed is friendly for both. Right. You know, it has a little bit of text, but for the most part, it works without audio and it works with it. So what we've been trying to do, and I'm a big fan of music in general, so I spend a lot of time figuring out what audio tracks go with what videos. So for me, it's finding a way to use that audio to make it a little bit better on YouTube without really changing the visuals a whole lot. I think that makes it easier on our videographers. For me, it's tough because I've pushed them a lot over the last 2 years, and if I would say we need to make one version of this and another video version of that, they would probably kill me. So I've been trying to do subtly a couple of things like that, like working with audio, playing around with just videos that don't have a lot of text with them, or if they do, it kind of works like that. So that's our process there.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from the University of Missouri. I was just wondering how much planning and time goes into these videos that you create.
It depends. Sometimes we've had videos that have come up in a day, and we've put out a video the next day. There are times like this, the video that I showed, that was a series of 4 videos that we did a proposal for. We thought about it for, you know, 4 months, planned out how, I mean, we had to get somebody approved to fly a drone on our campus. You know, there were things in place that we had to get in place and think about. And that series also came with other things. We did Instagram photos around that to launch when we launched those videos. We also did a BuzzFeed list, like 5 things you would love to do at WVU in the fall, something like that. So when we do more than just a video, that comes with some more planning. But I would say in general, we're thinking maybe a week or two in advance and doing the video and producing it. And I would say one thing about our video crew is they are super good at getting videos turned around really fast. And I think at most universities, approval process is a disaster, and ours used to be, but we've really, really worked on it to the point where I can text our creative director and I can text our VP and really force it through, and they understand. At first, they hated me, but now I think they're getting it, that we need to get things out at, you know, a quick rate, because especially around events and things like that, we really need to push for that. And I'm kind of on the philosophy, we don't do a lot of live video because we're so good at turning things around very quickly. So we'll have a couple of videographers go out, shoot an event, and then come back and we'll put a video out the next morning. And to me, I think that that makes us a little bit different, and the fact that we can pull that off. So I like to take advantage of that.
So it sounds like a lot of your social media goals are centered around recruitment. So I'm curious, do you consider an international audience when you're making these videos and or just social media posts in general? And if so, do you find that the international audience is connecting with the Gen Z kind of tropes? And is there a particular platform that you think works best?
So for us, we are fairly regional. We have, I think it's 8% of our student body is international. So for the most part, we're getting our students from connecting states to West Virginia, which I promise is a state. So for us, what we've seen, I will be honest, we don't put a lot of stake into international students when we're doing things. But what we have seen is that Snapchat has been big with our international students. So when we do, we've done Takeover Tuesday, where we have a student take over our account for, it's probably been 2 years or so. And we've seen, especially when we've had international students take over, the amount of reactions that we get, the amount of questions that we get asked, they triple. And most of them are from international students. So we find that that's a good way to really get at them, especially students from the Middle East. They use Snapchat a lot, at least from my perspective. So.
All right, just one more question.
Hi, so for those of us who do not have dedicated social media teams or budgets for videographers, in your opinion, is it better to have more raw video out there than nothing at all?
I think yes, but what I would say is you still have to look at quality. So I'm okay with raw video as long as it's not shaky and as long as the audio's good. Those are the two things, and that's why we don't live stream a lot of stuff, because we don't have the ability to set up mics and really get the right camera angle and things like that. When we do, then we live stream the crap out of it, I'll be honest with you. But I think that's the key. So if you do post a lot of raw video, and I'm a fan of that, because I think any video is good content. But making sure that it has good audio and that the visuals are, you know, as good as they can get, I think are the key there.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you.